I think it is important. Any new tool in the arsenal is valuable. There's only so much, though, that can be done by emphasizing, well, this is biological, but I guess a technological approach. In Israeli airports, they use some high technology, but the general thrust is to emphasize the human factor. TSA security personnel need to have an associate's degree, in other words, 2 years of college, and then they're trained. Airport security in Israel, they're all former army personnel. They're much more trained in detection, interrogation. It's sometimes described as profiling, but it's not really profiling because they're not simply pulling out of line people who look Arab, but they're pulling out of line people who have the telltale signs of somebody who is up to something nefarious. But then this brings us back to, well, why? If that's actually much more effective, as it's been shown to be in Israeli airports and in American airports.
Is that because there are people who make money from technology? I mean, why do you think that is? Is it a cultural thing?
Well, I think it's the scale of the problem. The TSA has 55,000 employees. And I don't know. I think it is. It's historical. It's cultural. Our fascination with technology, our expectation that technology, while it presents problems, we assume can always provide the solution as well.
So given the scale of the problem here in the United States, I mean, it sort of makes more sense that this new breed of dog would fit a niche here as opposed to in Israel.
Well, as long as it's a all of the above solution, that's important. Because, I mean, if you're really thinking about anti-terrorism or counterterrorism, it takes place in about at least four different ways. One is neutralizing enemy leaders, killing or capturing them. Another is interdicting funds, material resources, human resources, safe houses, passive support. One then is dealing with terrorist acts after the fact. How are they investigated? How are they caught? How are they prosecuted? And then if you're talking about how do you harden targets, you don't want to put all the eggs in one basket because that's such a resource-intensive way of dealing with the terrorist threat, because then you can keep asking, well, okay, we've made this target secure. Well, then you look around and you see how many other targets are vulnerable.
Are we too scared of something that's fairly unlikely?
Oh, it's absolutely. And it's an unpopular thing to say that because terrorism has achieved such a grip on us today. You can pick your statistic. Americans are far, far more likely to die from something preventable, like lung cancer that you get because of smoking, or heart disease, or, you know, automobile fatality. But it comes down to risk analysis and the psychological dimension of it. If you ask people, what do they feel safer doing, traveling by car or traveling by plane? Most people are convinced that they are far safer in their own car. Partially, it's a sense of control. But of course, it's also how fatalities are reported. Getting into the car and risking life and limb every day is just sort of part of the cost of living in the modern world, particularly in one that characterized by urban sprawl and private commuting, as it is in the States. But the fatalities per mile traveled for air travel are far, far lower. It's low risk, high cost. When a plane goes down, one or two people don't die. As in the case of an auto fatality, it's hundreds perhaps. And that grabs our attention. And of course, those who commit terror acts, that's the calculus of it. The danger is relatively minor. Never mind then that we are convinced that the terrorist threat to us is still from beyond our shores. It's from the alien other. It's from the Arab or the Muslim who should look like they are a terrorist. Never mind that, except for 9/11, in the last several decades, there are far more deaths of Americans from terror acts carried out by Americans. So which is also a part of how media entertainment has twisted our sense of risk evaluation.
Now, speaking of media and perception, does just the reporting of this potential new technology, does that help in the larger problem because it sort of makes people feel a little safer?
I don't know. That's a good question. It might make people a bit safer. I think the enormity of the threat and the way it's been hardwired into all aspects of our daily life, and not just our media consumption, but, you know, entertainment and our the daily rhetoric we employ, the terror threat has become so omnipresent that I think it needs to be contested on a far more sort of fundamental basis. Why are we so afraid of this? We spend very little of our time actually looking at the motivations of those who might want to carry out these acts. Part of the danger, of course, is that when you explain, some people see that as a justification. So I don't know if we can make ourselves feel safer by only treating that side of the equation.
Dr. Lowe, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.